Stardate 97872.99. Welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod. I'm Mike Moody, and with me is...
Mariah Gossett.
And Grant Davis.
Lord. At least you're not covered in, like melty white face paint that is going to give you a rash all night.
Yeah. Would you believe that I happen to have enough items for a steampunk costume, even though I didn't know I had all these?
I 100% believe that.
That's not a stretch, man.
How weird and unnecessary.
Tonight, we're talking Star Trek Discovery Season 3. We're going to break down the Season 3 teaser trailer and other Season 3 promo material and some news. And we're going to get a sense of what we can expect from Season 3 of Disco when it returns later this year. And we'll also be dropping some Season 3 theories. We have theories from some of our listeners as well. Theories we've been coming up with for the past several weeks. Right, Grant?
We've been really doing our homework, preparing. These are all thoroughly researched. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and as some of you might know, we are live streaming the podcast on YouTube tonight. So if you're joining us live, make sure you can be a part of the conversation. Drop us a comment, question, or what is your Discovery Season 3 theory or ideas or dreams that you want to see happen this season? Just tag us in the comment at Star Trek Pod or type the word pod, P-O-D, in all caps before your comment so we don't miss it. We will be getting to those later in the show. So as we keep going, save some of those questions for the end.
I want to remind everyone to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hit that little subscribe button wherever it is. And visit StarTrekPod.co. to subscribe to the podcast, get all of our back catalog where we covered every single episode of Discovery and every single episode of Picard. Season 1, written by Chabon.
Another way you guys can help us out is through Patreon.com. Go to Patreon.com and make a per episode pledge. You can give us a buck or two an episode. Preferably two an episode, because that also gets you the special invite over to our private Slack channel where we're doing a bunch of watch parties, talking Trek every single day. It's a lot of fun. We'd love to have you guys over there. We understand that money is tight right about now, so if you guys are spending it with us, we do really appreciate it.
All right. So for anyone who doesn't know, we launched this podcast a few years ago strictly to cover Star Trek Discovery. We covered all two seasons of Disco, and we expanded this year to include coverage of Season 1 of Picard on the main feed, and we're also covering older Trek shows on our Patreon feed. But, guys, it's been a while since we've talked about Discovery. The show has been off the air. It's going to be a year, April 18th.
Dang. I missed it. You know, we had to slog through that Picard garbage.
We were pretty mixed on Picard Season 1, for sure.
Yeah, but I'm excited for Disco to come back, and all of the promos that have been coming out, especially during Picard, have me extra excited. And I know we're about to sort of dive into the trailer that they released in October during New York Comic Con.
Yeah, and I'm super excited to talk about Discovery. First up, we'll analyze and break down that trailer and talk about that tiny little teaser trailer thing they put out too. And then we'll dive into some news and some theory discussion. But first, let's kick things off with the trailer.
Yeah. We're going to see it. Ooh. We're going to hear it.
Yeah. You guys ready? Technology.
I hate it already.
I've spent a year.
I love this sequence. All the different awesome hairdos.
I like seeing all the stuff in the background too.
Andorians.
What are those blue and white Yeti things?
Andorians.
That looks like a pain in the ass to walk on. What's that
flag,
symbol?
The Federation
what?
Flag.
Okay. It's you, Commander Burnham. Friends. It's an episode of Friends.
No, those are trills. She has carried us into the future. And it will be our privilege.
Okay.
Who's that? Who's that girl?
This Wesley Crusher. Let's see how this plays out, shall we?
Where will you go? Wherever the answers are. Michael Burnham, again, you're our only hope.
I'm so stoked.
Oh, there it goes.
It's just going to keep going. Yeah.
Okay. That was the trailer. Let's do some trailer hot freaks.
Hot freaks! Aww. I woke up my kids with that.
You actually did it loud. Okay.
Get in trouble.
Well, Grant, you're talking. What's your hot freak on this trailer?
It's kind of cool. I'm excited to see these alien worlds that we're traveling to. I think everything is just like really unknown, not just to me, who's less indoctrinated into the world of Trek, but I think for everyone else too, because we're jumping like way into the future. We're dealing with a timeline that hasn't really been documented as far as I know. So yeah, I'm super excited to figure out what is going on with this kind of time jump. With Michael Burnham, not maybe like she's kind of moving ahead in time. She doesn't seem connected with the rest of her crew yet, and maybe they meet up at some point. So I'm imagining there's going to be like concurrently running storylines, even if they're not at the same timeline. And I don't know what the big mystery is. Like, are we now rooting for them to try and get back in time to our timeline, or are we just on? For like a new adventure in this super future that we're in. I don't know. And I am excited to find out.
Mariah, let's hear from you.
Yeah. I'm really excited as well. It looks like we're going to get to see a lot of different alien planets, which I really enjoy. I think the special effects, again, look incredible. That last shot of the ship at the very end, it looks great. I'm excited you pointed out the trills. I didn't really know. It's like every time I watch the trailer, I see something new. Like when we have that time lapse of Burnham at the beginning, we get all the stuff in the background that's accumulating. She looks like she's just on like permanent archaeological dig mode, trying to find clues for whatever her mystery is that she's trying to solve. I think the trills are going to be interesting as well, because obviously they are keepers of so many memories and lifetimes. And so hopefully they'll kind of cue us in and fill in some of the backstory we might miss. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we're going to have some searching and seeking, classic Trek style. You know, I think they're missing a crew member and they're going to have to go find their missing crew member and unravel all the things that have to be unraveled. So I'm really excited.
All right. Yeah, I'm pretty psyched to learn what has become of Starfleet and the Federation, because we're like almost 1,000 years after the events of Disco Season 2. This trailer definitely teases that the show will show us that, like what happened to the Federation, if it's still around or not. It also seems to tease the idea that our Disco crew will have to fight to like reestablish Federation ideals in what once... I think they're still in Federation space, right? So...
If there's no real Federation, who knows?
Well, former Federation space. I mean, all that sounds like a pretty solid theme for the season, I think, like bringing back the Federation. I just hope we get a lot of surprises. I hope that instead of trying to reestablish like the exact Federation culture that we had before in this kind of, it kind of seems like a post-apocalyptic surrounding that they're in. I hope they come up with like some new ideals, like a new cultural system. That's more of a riff on the Federation, like more of a sense of the culture for like this new future that they're in, not just the same old thing. But yeah, it seems to me that it's going to be about reestablishing the Federation 1,000 years from now.
That's kind of awesome.
After some kind of fall. So.
And do you think Michael Burnham is the person who most exemplifies that?
I think it might be Michael Burnham.
She's Starfleet.
Yeah.
She is that ideal.
She is Starfleet.
She is the one who tried to blow up the Klingons and start a war. That is Starfleet ideals, isn't it?
Well, let's dive deeper into this trailer. First off, we see Michael Burnham. She awakes after traveling 930 years. into her future. She wakes up on a rocky terrain, presumably, I don't know, minutes, hours, days after the end of the season two finale. Because last time we saw her, she just zapped into the future and then they followed her, right?
I've had similar hangovers to that wake up. Just
reaching for your cell phone, trying to figure out what time it is.
You know, crawling out a pile of dirt. Yeah.
Where am I? She's still wearing her Red Angel spacesuit from the night before. On, and she has her phaser and some other Starfleet gear at her side. Do you, Grant, before we jumped on the pod, you had the impression that maybe Burnham overshot Discovery? Like maybe she's like a year or two separated from them or something?
Well, I think this in conjunction with the scene after where we see her solo narrating and she seems on her own ship and we're seeing this big passage of time for her. I mean, they're traveling through a wormhole, as we all clearly recall from season two, because all those memories are fresh in our brain. I had to just read the synopsis before we recorded. She was out in space separate from the ship. They were tethered together, but that doesn't necessarily mean that their full coordinates were going to be the exact point in time together. So I think there's a very good chance that she's like Castaway. She was kind of isolated from the rest of her crew, and a bit of time passes before she's reunited with them. Hopefully enough time that she can rethink what it means to be a part of Starfleet.
Do you think that maybe she showed up, or they showed up in the future before she did? She has to wait around a year for them or something like that?
They show up after. I think she's there 3 years earlier.
Oh.
Or something like that.
Okay.
That's my guess based on what we saw.
Yeah, and I thought they were very clever in that they didn't really show Burnham with the rest of the crew at all in that trailer. She's only with this new character Book, and not with any of our usual ensemble.
No, we see her with the crew later.
But it seems like she's reuniting with them when she's on the ship with them.
Yes, yes.
And
she's alone for the first several seconds.
I'd like to point out that Book is not the same as Aldous Hodge, who was Kraft in that little Calypso thing. Because I was thinking when we saw the promo photos, since they were jumping into the future, and that was the first character we saw from the future, I was thinking it was Aldous Hodge, aka Ray Voodoo Tatum from Friday Night Lights that we're going to be getting in the season. And it's not him. It's the guy that was one of the actors in Supergirl.
Yeah, David Ajala.
Which is cool, but I was like, I thought we were going to see Kraft.
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay, so then Burnham says that she spent a year looking for, quote, that domino that tipped over and started all of this, because we all speak in allegory. And we see a quick Buffalo 66 style spanning time sequence that shows her in what?
Spanning time. You like each other.
Time. We're spanning time. It shows her in what looks to be like maybe a shuttle pod. And she has like really different excellent hairstyles spanning this time.
See, guessing it has to be at least 3 years to grow your hair that long, right?
I don't know. Maybe she found some extensions out there.
I'm trying it out, seeing how long I can get my hair over this quarantine.
I just have the one rat tail back here. I'm just kidding. I don't have the rat tail.
Please grow a rat tail.
What are you guys thinking about? Where is she during this shot? Do you think she's in some kind of shuttlecraft?
I mean, it looks like some sort of a shuttlecraft thing, or it's her storage unit, and she's just sitting there every time contemplating her life as she fills it with stuff. But I would assume it's a shuttle pod.
I was thinking, because when I first saw that sequence, I was like, oh, that's the ship that she traveled in. But she didn't travel in the ship. She was in the suit. So
maybe it's the ship her mom came in? No, her mom also time traveled in a suit, right?
Yeah.
So maybe we're going to see a little bit of a sequence where, as they're traveling, Discovery tries to shoot out a shuttle pod to her for her to get into or something, because they're not sure of the ramifications of her going just in that suit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that shuttle pod goes with her onto that planet. Or maybe she lands on that planet and finds an abandoned shuttle pod, and she's like the Martian living years just trying to grow potatoes inside her own shuttle pod there.
I can totally see Alex Kurtzman saying, yeah, we based the first three episodes on The Martian, because that's a good movie, and I like to rip things off.
I'd be down for that.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's cool.
Shots fired across the bow.
Alex Kurtzman's like wiping his tears with his billions of dollars.
So she doesn't stay in that shuttle pod or whatever it is for too long, I guess, because then in the trailer we see her and the new character Book, played by new cast member David Ajala, being attacked by some aggressive looking Andorians and some other humanoids who are wearing like light colored uniforms and holding these two-handed pulse weapons, which look pretty cool. And she
walking
and Booker,
through Ireland or Scotland of the
Northern
lake.
Canada. Yeah.
Very peaty.
She and Booker walking through Northern Canada, vast green field with hills and mountains in the distance. They're carrying supplies. It looks like they're going on a very long journey. This is interesting. Book says Burnham believes in ghosts, referring to the Starfleet Delta that she has on her shirt. That's where I get the idea that Starfleet is a faded memory in this future time period. Like, it just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it obviously seems like there is, like, a smaller federation just based on the number of stars on the flag that we've now seen a few times in the many different promos.
Oh.
And so I'm assuming this means there's been some sort of collapse or, you know, something bad has happened to Starfleet, which is rendered the Federation almost useless, you know.
And I think the David Ajala's character is Booker Cleveland, but the promo material says he goes by Book.
Cleveland Booker.
Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
He's not Kraft. Cut to a quick shot of Tilly and Saru. We see our Discovery crew. It looks like they're in some kind of civilian garb, entering a new place, maybe where we saw Burnham at the beginning of this trailer. Maybe they're looking for her. Burnham was obviously separated from the crew at the end of season two when they time traveled. So Disco is probably looking for her wherever they are. Then Burnham and Book enter a large hall where a man in white says, "I've watched this office every day, believing my hope was not in vain. And that hope is you."
Do you think Michael he's an Burnham. AI bot?
Probably some kind of hologram.
Yeah, AI. You think he's just like, "I'm here to watch. What can I be of service for you?" Mm-hmm. I'm not a good hologram because I think those words did not work too well. Improv.
This guy who we think is a hologram, he retrieves and drapes the flag of the Federation of Planets on the wall as Burnham and Book look on. Again, yeah, this is all about reestablishing the Federation after it's crumbled or something's happened. We do see in Picard, since this is the same timeline, that Federation, a lot has changed in the Federation. It was like slipping into a dystopia a little bit. And even though at the end of Picard, we saw Picard try to correct some of that, maybe it just never really recovered and things went downhill.
Andorians. Explain these, blue-skinned, white-haired Greedos. I don't know what they are.
You just explained them.
Are they evil, or are
no.
they just...
Well, they
do their own thing?
They're aggressive, but not like as aggressive as, say, a Klingon. I feel like I'm being alien racist now.
You are.
I am.
Super.
Andorians were seen a lot on the original series. We saw them a lot in Enterprise. I don't know a whole lot about Andorians. I just know that sometimes they're friends, sometimes they're foes. They're one of the founding races of the Federation. Along
Enterprise.
With the Vulcans.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one with that theme song? How did that go?
All these shows have theme songs.
Oh my God, are you not going to do it?
It's been a long
time. There we go.
I was going to say, while you bought me time, Grant, I looked it up. So the Andorians were
they're from
one of
an ice planet. Yeah.
Yeah. The best part, if other people are scrolling the internet right now, you should definitely check out the Memory Alpha fandom page on the Andorians, because it's got some really great pictures of the original series makeup that was done for them. And it looks great.
Sarcastic great?
I mean, I like it.
Oh, okay.
I just have allergies. So, I don't have the corona.
Well,
sorry.
Alleviate those concerns.
I sneezed off microphone.
Okay, so these Andorians are coming in hot. Are we to take it that maybe they're the last bastion, the keepers of the fire, or are they some rogue bad guys that maybe need to kind of remember their past and remember that they were founding fathers of something better?
Well, later on in the trailer, we do see these Andorians show up again with the same outfits and the same weapons, but they're also hanging out with other races who are wearing the same outfits. And they all look like classic Trek aliens. So, and we'll get to it in a little bit, but let's just continue. We cut to someone walking, then floating in a cave pool while some people in red look on.
That's Burnham floating in the cave pool, right?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'd have to slow it down.
It looks like her when she was maybe young. I don't know. Maybe that's not her.
Well, I say no because this is a practice that the Trills do. Because the people in red look like Trills, the race that Jadzia Dax from Deep Space Nine is.
Trill.
They have those spots on either side of their heads and faces. And one of the Trills' practices was to commune in a pool with organisms known as symbionts, just like we see here. So, and for those who don't know, some Trills coexist with the symbiont, which is a sentient symbiotic organism that lives inside their bodies, and symbionts can live for many centuries, and they pass their memories on to different Trill hosts, and the Trill host gains all the symbiont's memories, which means someone in this group of Trills is definitely going to be super old, and like Mariah said earlier, probably fill us in on what happened to the Federation. Maybe probably. They might. One of these Trills might even know Michael Burnham, they might even know someone.
Yeah, it's like some short-haired kid or something in the pool. And it looks like Fringe, right? The isolation chamber.
Sure, but this imagery was first seen in DS9.
Which came first, Fringe or Star Trek in 66?
Star Trek. And if these are Trills, it's almost a definite possibility that they remember the Federation as it once was, since the symbionts have very long memories.
Oh, maybe they could be like record keepers.
Yeah. So we see Discovery floating in space, and then Tilly, Saru, and some of the bridge crew welcoming Burnham back on the ship, so they do find each other relatively soon in the series, or in the season.
Your girlfriend pops up.
Which one?
Kayla, is that her name?
Oh yeah, Kayla's there. We see Stamets, we see Culber. A title card says their fight begins. And we get
the first two seasons didn't matter.
And we get quick cuts of Burnham in her civilian clothes fighting people in the field. Giorgio shows up fighting more people in some dark
she
location.
Does.
Yeah. Every time they show Giorgio in this trailer, she's just beating somebody's ass. It looks like we cut to a new character in a blue Starfleet uniform. She's maybe inside of a Jefferies tube, and it's a very cool shot. She has like a short haircut. She looks kind of like Tig, but it's not Tig.
She looks kind of like the girl that's floating in the water, though.
Oh, okay.
Oh, maybe.
So maybe
she's a Trill.
Ooh, maybe she's a Dax.
Like Alien Nation Trills.
Here we go. Then Book and Burnham are pursued by a group that includes various alien races, shooting them with those same pulse weapons.
What is that? Is that Kilowog? What is that one?
Yeah. It looks like there's a Cardassian, a few Andorians, a blue guys, a Lorian, maybe. And it looks like there's a human all in that group that's attacking them. And if so, most of these would be races that we've seen before. We saw Cardassians on DS9. Cardassians were a foe. Andorians were part of the Federation, like a founding member. The Lorians, I believe, were part of the Federation. And, of course, humans.
Wait, which one's a Cardassian? What do they look like?
I'm not looking at it now, but...
Is it the pink guy with the big jowl?
No, I think that's a Lorian.
Okay.
And maybe the guy next or behind him?
They all have like Mega Man like hand blaster gun things.
Right. I've never seen those. I don't know what that is.
I wonder if there's become like a split and there is like a federation and then there's like an anti-Starfleet. And so maybe because they're all wearing Starfleet emblems and they're in a Starfleet ship, they're assuming that these are like holdovers. And maybe at this point, Starfleet has become this like evil, you know, we've said this a few times, an evil entity. Ah. And now there's like a few members of the Federation left who are all now ganged up to make sure Starfleet doesn't come back. But like our Starfleet is trying to be like, no, we can come back and be good Starfleet again.
Maybe they're like a police force then or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're wearing uniforms and they all have the same weapons.
They're coming in hot.
They're coming in hot. They're mm-hmm. some kind of police force, probably. We get a lot of quick action cuts. Sparks flying on the bridge. Burnham and company making tense faces. Georgiou fighting more.
Saru wearing a sweet robe sweater thing. It looks super cozy.
Was it cable knit?
It does look like it might be. I don't know.
Those are in.
It's 55 seconds in for anyone who wants to timestamp that sweet sweater.
Just freeze frame that. And then we go back to Michael Burnham in the room with the Federation flag and the man who maybe is a Federation ambassador or some kind of hologram asking, where will you go? And she responds with a non-response, wherever the answers are.
Everywhere.
Can't she just say like, oh, Kansas or something? And cut to the Disco logo, the end.
Okay, so one thing I want to point out. When we see her interacting with hologram dude, this must be very early on in the first episode. Mm-hmm. Her hair is very short still. This is probably when she first arrives in the future. She stumbles upon probably some visitor center. Oh, you new to this timeline?
welcome.
Yeah, whatever. Welcome here. Let me give you a little bit of hologram
Everything
info.
Everything is fine.
Yeah, exactly. This is totally Ted Danson here. Because, yeah, her hair is short. She seems to be just kind of getting the download of information. And so I'm thinking that she's going to be already well-researched in what is going on with this new reality by the time the rest of the Disco crew kind of comes on the scene. So Saru's going to get maybe a couple months of leadership role before she bursts back in. Then she's like, all right, fuck off, Saru. I'm back to being the captain.
I don't think we're going to get to see Saru or Michael Burnham ever be the captain.
I mean, well, that voiceover, though, from Saru felt like a very captain-y speech.
He was made the captain at the end of the finale, right? Season no. 2. He was made acting captain by Pike. Pike said, all right, you're acting captain. Take the Discovery into the future. Enjoy your captainship. Laughed and waved him away.
Bye. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, to also go with my theory that this is all about bringing back the Federation, we had that very short season 3 promo that was released with the season 1 finale of Picard. We see just Michael Burnham waving a cool, like wearing like a cool post-apocalyptic like black civvies,
right,
holding a tattered blue Federation flag in the middle of this like hilly, rocky terrain with a yellow sky hanging and a low moon behind her. It's pretty cool. So it just seems like, you know, she's planting the flag of the Federation again, trying to build it back up.
I don't really know. What was the plot of Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise, that they were at the blossoming and the beginning of Starfleet and they were trying to figure out what the ideals were and make it happen?
I think so. Just some of that.
So yeah. Is this basically them going, that didn't do it really well. We're going to try it again.
Enterprise 2.0.
Yeah.
With that would be fine. Song. That would
it's
be
been
fine.
A long road. I don't actually know how it goes.
That's actually fine. That works. Okay.
I think that I'm hoping that this has a little bit more of a clear vision. I found that I was getting a little bit confused in previous seasons when things would just kind of layer on top of each other and there's mycelial networks and people coming back from the dead and red angels, but also Spock the brother, and there's this whole storyline with the Vulcans and their fight with the Klingons, and I don't know.
And in Pike's whole like time crystal thing, yeah.
I think I'm starting to finally catch up and get the hang of it, but I did just confuse Klingons and Vulcans again. In my own brain, at least.
Klingons have two dicks.
Okay.
The Vulcans, I don't know if they have a dick or not.
They don't show this enough.
No. Maybe in season 3. So we still don't have a premiere date yet for season 3. On Twitter, Wilson Cruz and Anthony Rapp have both mentioned that even though shooting of season 3 wrapped way before the COVID
quarantine,
post-production is still going on. The quarantine will likely delay the premiere since the post-production team is working from home and probably just working two-hour days in Netflix.
Like the rest of us.
The rest of the day, yeah. Jonathan Frakes is going to direct an episode or two. Frakes. He said, "We're far in the future now, and Burnham has been separated from the crew, and then they reunite." So he did confirm that they're going to reunite pretty soon. Like, it's not going to be, the whole season's not going to be the search for Burnham. So
oh, that's, God. That's good. I don't think they'd want to do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go three episodes, given that Picard took three episodes to get off Earth.
But that was Chabon, and he is not running this show. Yeah. Speaking of show running, we have a new co-showrunner, Michelle Paradise. She joined the writing staff midway through season 2, and she's co-showrunning with Kurtzman for season 3. She previously worked on The Originals, Grant's favorite show.
Oh, yeah. Which one was that?
It's the CW Vampires, I think.
Okay, cool.
And the logo drama, X's and O's. Can't forget that.
Yes, also Grant's favorite show.
I have two favorite shows. You've two named favorites. Them both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all about those ones.
Kurtzman said, Grant, you asked earlier, like, is the season going to be about Discovery trying to get back home? Kurtzman said Discovery will probably never return to the past. The show's trek into the distant future is sure to be a game changer, not just for the crew, but for the series as a whole. I don't know if we ever have plans to return to the 23rd century. So it seems like, you know, for story reasons, since this started out as a prequel, which could be a little problematic with the storytelling, the solve for that, the solution was just to blast them further into the future and just set the story there.
We predicted this from the beginning, though.
From season 1.
That, yeah, yeah. We immediately went, oh, wait, they're in a ship that's able to travel through space. What's to prevent them from also traveling through time? Especially if, I don't know, I'm going to throw out a crazy idea. What if time crystals existed? And then, what? Time crystals existed. Ridiculous. This show is ridiculous. A lot of fun, but ridiculous.
This is Kurtzman. Kurtzman kind of supports, I don't even want to call it a theory, it just seems obvious that this is about the return of the Federation. He says, "We often talk about how Star Trek is a mirror that holds itself up to the world as it is. And we look around and we see a lot of disillusionment, a lot of confusion, a lot of disconnection. Many of the things that we long for, like hope, understanding, compassion, and empathy, seem to be waning more and more. But Star Trek is the ultimate beacon of hope. So if you go into the future that doesn't quite look like what you imagined it to be, Trek is always the anchor to bring you back to what is possible and who we are at our best. And Discovery, as they enter into that future, becomes this beacon that reminds people what's possible and what hope means."
So my understanding is that this is going to be a very, very tribal and tense future society. Everyone's going to be these warring factions, everyone looking out for themselves, for the individual. And then a person named Michael Burnham, who actually just goes by her last name, Burnham, or for short, Bernie, reaches out and tries to unite them with a message of, not me, us.
"Once again, I'm asking you for your gold press latinum." So yeah, and Michelle Paradise, they asked her if it's going to be a hard serialized story this season, or are we going to get more one-offs? She said it's going to be just like season two. There will be a serialized story that will go from beginning to end, but they're going to have more character-centric episodes that also tease the larger story.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. So that's good.
I mean, how are you guys feeling about how this kind of fits into the overall arc of the show? I mean, with where the first two seasons explored these, both these characters, kind of this revisionist take on what Starfleet is, the seedier underbelly, I guess, of it, and then maybe trying to chart new territory, both physically and sociologically, I guess, in how they can build those ideals.
I think the show always had problems from the start with this, because the way it was originally conceived by Brian Fuller was that each season would be a new time period in Trek history. So we would start before Kirk, and then we would jump way to the future and then back again. And that's what he planned out. And then he got fired, and they stuck with his original vision for the first season, which was set in the pre-Kirk era with Michael Burnham. And then they just kept that and scrapped everything else. So I don't know. It is kind of, the first two seasons were a little odd the way it the show never seemed super confident in what it was doing in terms of how it saw itself fitting into the larger Star Trek canon. So I think the idea of shooting the characters and the setting and everything to the far future that we've never seen before is not just exciting from a fan perspective, because I want to know what, you know, Star Trek looks like, you know, millions of years in the future or whatever, but it also just frees them up from any canon issues. And if they do want to play with canon, it's probably easier to do it this way than to like exist in Star Trek's past.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think it seems like Kurtzman and Paradise have really taken what they were given and figured out a way through season two to be like, we're leaving this. We're going to do a whole new universe. Mm-hmm. We have this great ship. We figured out a way to sort of write ourselves out of dealing with canon. And then we can go back and see what has already been established and play with that and give fans some fun nods to things they know have happened into the future, but we really get to write our future ourselves. So I think I'm really excited for season three because of that. You know, I think when you look at a lot of the way like the short treks have been put together, where I see a lot of that really creative storytelling coming into play, I'm really hoping we get to see that into season three as well. You know, right before this recording, I rewatched Calypso just to like refresh a few things and to try to remember exactly how far in the future the ship was left. And when we get to theories, you know, I can just ask y'all now, do you think, so the ship says to him, says to Kraft, I haven't had a crew for 1,000 years. And so when we originally saw that short trek, to me, that meant 1,000 years from when we were in, you know, like Pike era Star Trek. But now I'm thinking it's 1,000 years after this 900-year jump. So this ship has been around now for 1,900 years past when it was created. And it's just been living with all of that data and like creating this personality.
That's interesting. And
so anyway, I'm excited.
Right. And to your point, Mike, about them being a little less confident in the first two seasons, I think it's just interesting thinking about how when you are a part of something that's such a well-established franchise and you're writing a story that has to kind of thread between all these other, so many other stories, and with a fan base as rabid and maybe not the most generous if you make a mistake, let's say, that's got to give you a lot of anxiety, like for good reason. You don't feel very liberated to like take risks and big gambles in storytelling and feel that confident. And just taking them out of those time constraints where they have to adhere to everything that has been canon and established in that time frame, jumping 930 years into the future where technology can exist in a completely different range. Some, there can be new things. There can be things that are bass backwards and very low-fi, and it's fine. It's completely acceptable because this is new territory, which Star Trek should be exploring new territory, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a great place for the show to be because they can continue to riff on the themes of Star Trek, but they're not in this box where they're beholden to making sure they fit into canon anymore. So, and it's great. And it gives us a whole new galaxy to explore, even though it's the same physical galaxy that we've seen, but it's 1,000 years later. What has changed?
Mariah, what's the name of the person on set who keeps track of making sure everything fits in the
Chabon?
The Chabon.
The line producer?
Is it the line producer? They're making sure, like, oh, you guys, you already said this, you already established this, whatever, so you have to keep with it. I don't know. The historian or something.
There's like a, well, it depends. It's there's like a story producer in the writer's room, and then on set, it's a line producer who's making sure things are kept to script and continuity.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be so agonizing on a show like this. The amount of research, the amount of like other, like it's like a Marvel movie, right? You're like, all this other stuff's already been established and people are going to freak out.
For most writer's room, they have, I can only imagine. So all writer's room have a show Bible, which is like all of the rules for the universe that they have to uphold based on like the creator's vision. And so having to have the Gene Roddenberry show Bible, it has to be like as big as like the room I'm in right now. Like it has to be massive, the amount of canon that they
have
to work with.
It's just a room of those data pads that they had on Voyager.
Yeah, they're just swiping all over the place trying to find it. But yeah, it depends. So story, I mean, anyway, we can get into stuff. But in a writer's room, story editor is the person who's making sure the story lines up with the rest of the season.
You guys want to talk theories?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Drop your theories.
Oh, well, I'm going to leave that to Mariah.
Yeah.
Who okay. I think has some good theories.
Mariah's I'm a theory ready. Goddess. Do it.
All right. So I think, Chupi wrote about this, and I agree with her, especially after watching Calypso, is that the ship is going to become a bigger part of the show as a character because we see it grow into this personality into Calypso. And so I think because it now has all of the sphere data, they're going to have to figure out a new way to interact with it as this like mammoth AI computer that's just going to keep learning and maybe have that sort of data personality to it.
Show me respect or I will destroy you.
And then, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out, and I hope they answer the question of, because of Calypso, the ship says it was abandoned 1,000 years ago. Does that mean something happened to the crew as soon as we jump and it's been abandoned? Or does it mean that we're going to see a bunch of stuff happen and then eventually they have to like hide this ship for some reason? We've kind of talked about a lot of this, but the Federation has lost power. It's lost people's faith. Perhaps it's some stuff to do with what went down with Picard, an eventual mistrust of the Federation, specifically with Starfleet becoming the bad guys, and the Federation must, you know, fight together to figure out a new Starfleet that works in this far future. We've talked a lot about Burnham kind of being separated for a bit and then getting together. My spouse has the theory that we're going to see sort of like a Western style approach to this season, which I think would be really fun, where Burnham is essentially the new sheriff in town and has to like,
like Deadwood,
figure this out. Yeah. Which would be kind of fun.
Going back to your other point though, the idea that Picard in some way jeopardizes what is Starfleet and is instrumental in the dismantling of it, I think would be so fascinating given my understanding of the reverence for Picard himself. If he was instrumental in tearing down what is Starfleet and making an existence that is so threadbare of those ideals in the future that Michael Burnham and crew have to come and like rebuild everything. I think that would be pretty scarring on his rep, right?
It's like The Last Jedi, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I haven't seen that yet. I have no idea.
This could
you haven't seen The Last Jedi?
Nah.
The second one? Really?
Oh, I saw that. I don't know.
The Rian Johnson one. Then.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it could be like a weird alt version to the theory I pitched at the end of Picard, in that the all humanity is destroyed and Discovery has to figure out how to fix it. Like a softer version of that would be because of these actions and maybe the Ferris Rangers. Like we were seeing some previews of it. And on the timeline, I think between where Disco is landing and where Picard sort of ended has about a 600-700 year gap. I'm not great at math, so check me if I'm wrong. But, you know, in that time period, perhaps we see the evolution of like this evil thread of control sort of infiltrating and becoming what we saw happening with Commodore O. And then it just continues to spiral out of that. And so there's like, maybe the Ferris Rangers are really all that's left of people who hold on to the ideals of Starfleet. And maybe we get this great badass story about Seven of Nine and how she was like the last bastion of hope for the good ideals of the Federation. I don't know.
I really don't think they're going to be any really hard Picard tie-ins at all. Shaban was asked about this before, and he's like, I don't know what they're doing. They don't know what we're doing on our show. It's totally disconnected, like, whatever.
You don't think they're just saying that?
No, because
I think they would want to market it as a crossover kind of thing if they could.
They would, but they're not. I mean, basically the deal with Shaban was... by Mariah.
Mariah just left.
She's like, fuck you, Mike.
She's like that symbol
cat
on your
was
chest.
Meowing at my door. I had to let him
poor
out.
Kitty. No, but the deal with Shaban was the reason he took on Picard was because it was part of his deal, so he could adapt his own novel for CBS All Access. And
he wrote Calypso, didn't he?
Yeah, he did write Calypso. And that was after he got the job for Picard. But from everything I've read and seen, they're just not really talking to each other much between Picard and Discovery.
That seems like a mistake, right?
Especially for season one of Picard and season three of Discovery. So I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure they have to kind of keep things straight, but they're not really feeding into each other all that much. And I think that has a lot to do with Discovery just rocketing in 1,000 years into the future so they can do whatever the hell they want. But I think Book will somehow become captain of the Discovery, cementing the fact that Saru or Burnham will never become captain. I think maybe the Trills might be the villains because of how the symbionts can live multiple lives and have, maybe they've grown arrogant and cynical and totalitarian.
I feel like anyone who says Trill is the enemy.
Word.
It's Trill Dog.
And you and Logan Paul, just the enemy. Appropriate reaction.
Oh, say his name over and over so we can get more hits on this video.
Logan Paul. Logan. Oh, Candyman.
It's like Candyman. He just comes in.
Grant, any theories?
I mean, outside of kind of liking the idea that I like some of the things that Mariah was saying, and some of them I hated. I'm kidding. This future, I'm often a little bit skeptical of what is initially presented. I think that we often will get a glimpse of something that seems chaotic, but it's actually the organized rebels who are fighting something that's even deeper and even more evil. So maybe it is that the Federation is the scrappy rebel group or whatever, or maybe the whatever the Federation is now corrupt and it needs to die, and there needs to be this rise of Skywalker to take its place.
James Worm had a pretty cool theory in our Slack group. He says, I think there's a secret federation and the Discovery slowly uncovers and tries to bolster it. Not unlike the Serenites of Star Trek Enterprise. Possibly meaning there is a persuasive corrupting force keeping any alliance dead. Maybe warp drives are mostly disabled due to damaged subspace, disrupting any interplanetary commerce, trade, diplomatic relations. And the mycelial network and the drive technology could be what changes the balance of power in the Alpha Quadrant.
Wow.
That's definitely going to have to come into play.
That's actually...
mycelial network. Yeah.
Dude knows what he's talking about. That's awesome. I assume. I assume he knows what he's talking about. I don't.
The Star Trek expert. Yeah, I really like this. Do we have any theories in the chat? Did you guys see anything there?
I mean, Mike, let me ask, since you have this... I always feel like I have to contextualize. Let me ask. If we see that Starfleet fell, is it worth saving Starfleet, or is it worth building something different and something maybe better? Are there problems already with Starfleet before we saw them try to break it down in more modern Star Trek iterations? Like, were you seeing problems in the original or the Next Generation?
Yeah, DS9, which is my favorite Star Trek, did a great job of critiquing Federation ideals and critiquing the monoculture that was the Federation. We had a lot of aliens from outside of the Federation on that show, and we got their perspective of how the Federation does not work for them and Starfleet doesn't work for them, and some cultures could never see themselves in the Federation. Not that they're evil or bad cultures, they just don't fit within the Federation, even though they're fine, great cultures. So I think I would love to see the show try to, like I said earlier, create a new culture in this far future that is inspired by the Federation we've seen before, but that is more relevant to the culture that they see when they land in the future. Does that make sense? We can bring everybody together, but not necessarily make, I guess, maybe celebrate diversity a little more, even though Star Trek and the Federation was typically about celebrating diversity. But really, that diversity always had the shape of a humanoid alien that's, you know, understood English.
Right. I mean, I'm so used to seeing little clips of, like, Captain Kirk dropping down and punching an alien in the face, punch first, ask questions later kind of thing, rather than, like, going in with compassion and trying to understand where they might be coming from. And yeah, it seems like a lot of
Picard thing.
A lot of the conflict in a lot of those shows seems to be like, oh, we learned eventually what was going on with you, and I wish we would have had a better approach to it. And then Picard definitely seemed to be exploring this idea of, like, while there's a Starfleet ideal, there is this undeniable bigotry in what Starfleet actually is in its operating practice, and how it conducted itself with the Romulans, painting everyone with a broad brush, and how it was so limiting in how it wanted to perceive what synthetics are and what they could be, and just banning them outright rather than exploring and trying to accommodate a space for them within. I mean, it just seems so so constricting and so territorial, in that we own space and we are going to dictate how everyone in space operates, rather than
right.
Let's all just look out for each other and try and have everyone's back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the worst version of Star Trek or the worst episodes or series really lean into those stereotypes with aliens and just don't let them grow. And the best version of Star Trek dismantles or deconstructs those stereotypes and just breaks out of them, you know? So I hope that's what we're getting here.
Okay. I'm ready for questions.
All right. Do we have any questions in the chat? A lot of people talking.
I drove them away. I think we had questions and then I just kept talking.
No, everyone really liked your question from what I saw. Some people recommending some episodes of TNG and Deep Space Nine that you'll never watch.
Man, people love giving me homework. I'm not doing it. I'm just going to run my mouth and say stupid shit.
Any big questions? There's some talk of... Oh,
I see a question. Let's see. Charlie Whitmore says, do you think that we'll pick up on Control again in Season 3? Mariah, you mentioned Control in some of your theories. You think we'll see them again?
I think a form of Control. You know, it might not be called that anymore, but I think if that nugget of evil has grown and transformed throughout the 1,000 years we're jumping in, 930 years we're jumping into the future, then we'll probably see some version of it. Yeah.
Oh, Chupi says, Andorians on Enterprise are great. Grant should watch some Rishrian. You
need to watch Enterprise, Grant. She wants me to do homework. Man, she wants me to watch all this because I guess I'm just ignorant. I don't know. I mean, I do know I am, but
yeah,
I'm still not going to watch it.
I will say the few Enterprise episodes I've seen, the ones with Shran, well, they're not good, but Shran's good. He's played by Jeffrey Combs, the actor. Jeffrey Combs is just great.
P.W. Gregory was in reference to the line about ghosts and the Starfleet badge. Mm-hmm. He says, I think that implies dead rather than weakened, which, yeah, maybe Starfleet just doesn't even exist, but you see it as a symbol. And right. it's like a Knights Templar or some shit. You're like, oh, okay. That's a thing from the past.
That's what I was thinking too when he sees that and he says you're searching for ghosts. That means they're not here anymore, right? But we do see we see the Starfleet Delta in the trailer because the Discovery crew is wearing it. But we see the Federation flag in the trailer because someone or something puts it on a wall that already exists in this far future. So the idea or ideals of the Federation still exists. So maybe the Federation's weakened, but maybe Starfleet is gone.
And Mariah, you were talking about how the flag had less stars. So there's a version of that flag that has a bunch more stars that represents a wider reach of the Starfleet Federation.
Yes.
Oh,
well, I can find it and put it somewhere for you.
That's a clever observation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so far I've seen lots of comments of people wanting you to join the watch parties in our Slack channel, Grant, to watch some Enterprise.
It's not going to happen, then guys.
You just want to hear me go, what is that? I don't get this. Why are they doing that? Oh, God, one of these plot points again. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to ruin it for you.
And then someone asked about Laurel Marg.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we'll see her back. I mean, the fun thing about actors who play aliens with a lot of makeup on is sometimes they bring them back to play other characters in the show. So yeah, hopefully, like
Jeffrey Combs played a number of different characters. He played Shran. He played Wei Yun. He played tons of characters on Star Trek. In terms of Laurel, do you guys think we'll see kind of a cutback to 1,000 years ago, and we'll catch up with Laurel and Ash Tyler, and maybe they'll find a way to communicate with Disco in the future?
Didn't I go on a rant about how much I hated that plot line at a certain point? Everything that was on the Klingon world, I was just like, I don't want. Quit making me read.
I don't want that. I don't think we'll see it.
Illiterate people like me are people too.
Yeah.
I'm assuming if we got anything, it might, maybe there's some flashback scenes as people are explaining history with the long, monologue about what's happened over time since we jumped forward. It's possible, but I think they'll probably save them for their, that other show that they're trying to do about the Starfleet KGB. No, I'm totally blanking.
Oh, Section 31 or something, right?
Yeah, Section 31.
We'll probably save him for Section 31.
So, Milo says, hi guys, just floating around and saw this. I'm here for it because disco is kind of confusing. I'm not going to lie.
Right?
Yeah.
I totally get that. I'm sure you see a video where people like talking about it and you're like, good, explain this to me. Because I feel like in a way that's what this podcast is very useful to me, because I'm constantly here going, I don't know who the blue dudes with the white hair are. What is their significance? And you guys are like, Angelicans are these magic blue beings that live in ice palaces and shit. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Oh, Grant, you've gotten a suggestion of something else to watch that is not Star Trek related.
Watch Parasite, Grant.
I have seen Parasite.
There you go.
Are you implying there's a lesson I need to learn here? Have I taken over?
Oh, somebody's upset that you call the Andorians Angelicans. They're Andorians, all caps.
Oh, I know what I'm doing, guys.
Yeah,
I know what I'm doing.
Oh,
so Charlie Whitmore says, I want more Stamets and Colbert. Me too. I want some Colbert.
I think we're gonna get that.
What do you think we're gonna see with their relationship? Because we left off with Stamets doing like bending over backwards, almost sacrificing his own life to try and bring Colbert back from the dead. It didn't work on his own, but then by happenstance, Colbert came back in a little cocoon and doesn't remember him. Or doesn't remember his relationship with him. Do you think they're going to explore whether or not there's this idea of what true love, I guess, that can be reignited and refound?
I'm hoping we're going to see like their courtship from the beginning. You know, it's like, I think at the end we kind of got them being like, they obviously feel things for each other. You know, it's Stamets has these larger feelings due to the history that he can remember, but I'm hoping we get like a total rekindling. It's like them going out on dates and like trying to like start from the beginning.
But psychologically, that's so unfair. I mean, to both of them, but to Stamets, who already still remembers that whole relationship and losing him, only to have to like go through all of those motions again. Like, that's so emotionally taxing and unfair.
Do you think Stamets will try to Eternal Sunshine his relationship so he could have
start
it all
over as well?
Again? Yeah.
Is that possible in Trekverse? Have you seen something where someone tries to like wipe particular memories?
Probably. I can't think of anything right now, but
I'm sure if he goes back into Mushroom World, he can talk to Mushroom Girl and she can say, let me mushroom that out of you.
Yeah, mushroom, mushroom.
It's all Smurf to them. Let me mushroom it out. Yeah.
Mushroom it out. Chippy says that she thinks that the Colmets relationship will be a lot more like the first season, but they'll have a closer relationship. I hope so. I love them together.
Yeah, and now they're stuck with each other in the future. So, Got to figure it out.
So, one more. P.W. Gregory says, please let season 3 be more of an ensemble show. That's all I really want. If Clyde were here, he'd be high-fiving P.W. Gregory virtually, because Clyde is always talking about he wants to team up. He wants to learn more about this bridge crew. We do have like three or four bridge crew members who we don't really get to know a lot in the first two seasons who are in this season, who went to the future with our main cast. So hopefully we'll get to see more of them in season 3.
I'm sure I've brought this up every other time I hear this, but most everyone is familiar with the show The Office. And you can't think of The Office without thinking about that being such an ensemble show. But the interesting thing is, if you watch that first like 3 or 4 seasons of that show, the background characters are background characters. They will pop in for a line here or there as often as we get them in Star Trek, I think. Like you see them, they'll get their shine in one episode for maybe like a minute. they'll get a little bit of a bigger part. And yet now it's so, you know who they are by how they've performed in the background, and they're key players in the background. You need people in the back filling out the space and constantly being there and being a known entity that you can look at and be like, I'm familiar with you on this whole other level because I've seen how you've developed throughout the season. So I think that we're going to see it more and more as they flesh it out. And that's what a lot of these shows do really well. They don't make all of these characters feature players right up front. It's too much, mm-hmm. but they slowly build it up until now we can do a breakout thing with Kayla and Mike's going to love it. Or now we can do something with Robot Girl and Clyde's going to bellyache about how she died too soon.
Yes, more Kayla screen time, more Kayla episodes. Star Trek, Kayla, the series. I'm down for it.
You're way too down for it.
Yeah.
She's fine. All right. Anything else we want to say about season 3 coming up before we wrap?
I mean, I'm just excited, and I hope we get a release date soon, at least maybe like, and maybe they'll be like coming in June, like something to give me a little yeah. beacon of calendar hope.
I'm right there with Mariah. I think that we, the human race, need this right now. We need our media to give us calendar dates for things to look forward to. And we're here to support your projects. And even if you need an extra week after you say June and ends up July 1st or something shit, that's fine. But at least give me a roundabout date I can kind of start projecting.
Even summer. Like, just tell me summer so I know I'm not waiting for the fall, you know?
It's such a weird limbo we're in.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, can't we all just be like Killing Eve, which is coming out early because they know we need it?
Yeah. I was so excited to see that's coming out already, season 3. Yeah, I'm with Choopy. She said stupid COVID really put the brakes on Disco 3.
But what's COVID. Our plan? What's our plan, fearless leader?
Mariah?
Mariah, of course.
Oh, me? Well, guys, we're going to try to release at least 2 episodes per month here in the regular feed. We're going to be doing some deep dives on some of our favorite characters from Discovery while we're waiting for season 3. So if you have suggestions on who you want us to cover, you know, leave it in the comments, hit us up on social media, or even better, join our Patreon, because then you can tell us in the Slack channel repeatedly who you want us to talk about. And if you're a patron right now, you can be getting even more content from us. Mike and I have been talking about Best of 7 of 9. So we've been rewatching some key Voyager episodes that give us the history of 7 of 9 and kind of how she's progressed to the Ferris Ranger we see her today. So if you want to hear some content about old Trek, you should definitely join us there at the $2 per episode level, and it's gonna be a good time. My mom joined. If she can do it, you can do it.
Yeah, my mom hasn't joined. She sucks. You see, Grant, a good leader delegates. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back in a few weeks to do some more Disco season 3 previewing and do some character arcs, like Mariah said. Before we go out, Grant, you want to tell people about what they can do to support us?
Oh, me the pimp, huh? Yes. That's my job. Pimp us out. Okay, fine. I'll do it. Hey, guys, you know that money you have that you just want to spend on something? Spend it on a project you love. Spend it on something that is making beautiful podcast art for the world. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and make a per episode pledge of $2 or more. Please join us in our watch alongs that we're doing, our little bonus episodes where we will do quizzes occasionally or do silly things. You can join us on our private Slack channel where you can chat with all these other lovely Star Trek people. Here's the thing about Star Trek, real Trekkie Star Trek fans. They're all very kind and very welcoming and just very passionate about the same thing that you love, Star Trek. So come over and talk with us about it. That is patreon.com/StarTrekPod. We appreciate all of you guys. We love you. And we want this to grow so that we can take over and create our own Starfleet.
And if you guys don't have the funds right now, we understand. But if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, that helps other people find the show. So maybe as other people are getting excited about Disco Season 3, they'll find us in that feed and they'll up our listenership, which helps us try to get advertisers.
Yeah. And remember to find us at StarTrekPod.co. Mariah, where can we find you online?
I'm at Mariah Gossett. That's Mariah with a Y and a Gossett with two S's and two T's on all social media platforms. Feel free to hit me up. You can see more of my cat, who you all saw in this video, make an appearance in the background.
What about you, Grant?
At Baron Von Grant. It says it right here in the video if you're watching. Right there. Go there on Twitter or Instagram.
Follow us on Twitter and Insta at Star Trek Pod. Find me on Twitter at Mike Moody. Live long and prosper.
Bye.